Welcome to the Bud's Beer Blurb podcast. You can find the Bud's Beer Blurb blog at budsbeerblurb.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Just search at Bud's Beer Blurb and we'll pop right up.
Hello, I'm Bud Esty, and welcome to Bud's Beer Blurb, the podcast. On this episode, Nick and I had the opportunity to go to Windsor, Connecticut to visit Dudley Town Brewing. I gotta say, we had a great time. The brewery is amazing. We sat down with John and Daryl, two of the owners, and Rob, the head brewer. And I truly feel like they rolled out the red carpet for us. And I really felt like the interview was going to be a disaster. I neglected to pack a few items that were absolutely necessary to record the interview. So we had to improvise, and I had to actually use my phone. Luckily, I had some wireless mics to go with that. And we actually pulled this off. Now, things sound a little hollow, mostly because of the microphones we were using, and also that this place is so big that there's no way we would have got a studio sound. Nevertheless, we had some great beers, fantastic company, and I think we pulled this one off. So, ladies and gentlemen, here is our interview with Dudley Town Brewing in Windsor, Connecticut. Bud from Bud's Beer Blurb, and I am in Windsor, Connecticut, and I am at Dudley Town Brewing, and I'm sitting here with two of the owners and the head brewer and my co-host, Nick Briggs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, don't do that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you if you could just introduce yourself real quick and maybe just say a little something about yourself. We're going to start out with John since, I put him on the spot already.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Levine. I like long walks on the beach. I like beer.
Okay, that's enough of that. Rob?
Hey, I'm Robert Lawrence. I'm the head brewer here at Dudley Town, and I also like beer.
Sounds a lot like my first introduction.
And last but not least, Daryl.
Yes, this is Daryl Dunlap, and I am co-founder of Dudley Town Brewing Company. Jonathan and I started this company back in 2017 and with a vision of building what we have here today, and we're excited to have you guys here.
You know, I think I'm going to direct all the questions to Daryl.
That sounds about right.
All right. Well, right now we're sitting here inside the brewery. This is a great spot, folks. I love this brewery. It's beautiful, it's clean, and it's rustic at the same time. The tables are just made out of... How did you do the tables?
When we were looking for countertops and tables, we got really fortunate. We were looking at different types of materials, and we didn't really know what we were going to land on. We were looking at granite, but we really wanted to have something that was going to go with the motif of Dudley Town Brewing Company. And my wife actually found this company, Gill CC Woodworks, and they're out of Gill, Massachusetts. It's a multi-generation tree farm. He had saved this wood for a special project, and James, our other business partner, and I took the trek up to Gill, Massachusetts, and we walked through the whole facility, and then we walked to one of the places that they were storing this wood, and we walked into the barn, and we flipped back the big tarps and got his forklift, pulled the wood out, and we looked at it. It was in a very raw condition, but the boards were massive.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
And we made the deal, and here we are. We have beautiful countertops and tables that were all made by this company.
So, and this is like, this is called Live Edge, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's beautiful, folks. And while we're sitting here, we're sipping on some beers, and I think Nick and I might do a little review a little later on, but right now, I think what we're going to do is we're going to ask these guys, why did you get into the brewery business?
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of us have similar answers in why we get into the brewing industry. I think that, first and foremost, it's a love of craft beer. My personal, probably first introduction to craft beer was a long time ago. I remember the first time having a Sam Adams up at Boston Billiards up in West Springfield, Massachusetts. And I remember, you know, being a guy that drank beer that we're not going to talk about in this podcast because we're told not to.
Yeah, we don't mention those industrial beers.
Yeah, we don't want to have to take them out back.
Right, yeah. So I remember having that first Sam Adams and being like, holy shit, this is a little bit different than norm. And that was the first time having what I would consider to be craft. That was a long time ago. And then, you know, fast forward to the 2000s or the late 2010s, 2015s, 20, we discovered our local craft market, and you know, I think some of the inspiration that we drew from was obviously some of the bigger breweries that are in our local area here. The Alchemist was a big brewery that I'm sure a ton of us got an inspiration from. Treehouse was definitely an inspiration for us as well. And then just our local back east being here and local with us. But anyways, why did we get involved in it? I think for me, I was really interested in getting involved in a community-based business where people could come together and you know, enjoy each other's company and have beers. And you know, that really was my personal reason for wanting to do it.
And, you know, Connecticut breweries, I find they're very social. You don't find people getting in trouble. You don't find bouncers in breweries. Everybody considers it to be a community, and so I agree with that completely. You know, Rob, what got you into this?
So it was kind of an accident. I was actually living over in New Zealand, and I was teaching outdoor education and rewriting the program for the YMCA of New Zealand, and was over there having fun, living on the beach, and just met a couple guys that were doing some homebrew stuff. There was the guy who was leading it. He was from Chicago, and so I got intertwined with those people and kind of cut my teeth on that, made my way back to the U.S., and then was just finding that I was loving craft beer more and more, and eventually just took that to be my job and worked my way up the ranks of a few breweries. And then I was actually out west consulting when I was introduced to Daryl. And when I met these guys, I was like, well, damn, these guys really have a fire lit under their ass to do this the correct way. And so I wanted to be a part of this. And threw my hat in the ring, was pretty persistent, made my way out here, and now I'm just making some good beer, enjoying some good beer with some good buds.
You sure are making good beer. I'm drinking, now, one more time, John, what is this?
Soul Collector.
This is Soul Collector. It's a double dry hopped IPA.
Correct.
It's got an ABV of 8%.
Correct.
It is delicious. It is absolutely delicious, Rob. Gentlemen, well done. Well done here. The whole brewery, well done. I discovered you guys before I even started the blurb, and I started following you, and I threw out some messages, and I believe, John, you said at that point you started following right after the I got everything set up, you started following me.
Correct.
So I've been waiting for you guys for like 2 years. I was communicating every now and then. I throw something out there. Hey, how are you guys doing? Because I wanted to get out here. Brand new brewery, brand new blog. It just seemed to be kismet to me. So I waited 2 years. I got to ask, if it took that long, what was like any of the major setbacks? Did you have anything that went wrong, or, you know, what was your triumphs too?
So for us, we started in 2017 with the whole brewing in my backyard.
There you go. Yeah, that's a lot of people start that way.
Yeah, and I saw that's when you have the time stamped on your website. It was 2017, so I noticed that today too.
Yeah, so I mean, that's when we, you know, we set up the corporation. We decided that we're going to do this as a business. And then from that point, once we landed on the name Dudleytown, we decided to make it a real business. So that's when we set up our corporation, so on and so forth. And we were brewing just half barrel batches on a small pilot system at my house in the barn. But we also wanted to have, me personally especially, but Jonathan as well, wanted to have an inspiration room. So the barn was there. So myself, Jonathan, and a couple of our buddies, we just spent every extra hour that we had building out the interior of the barn. And a lot of the inspiration for the tap room here now came from that barn. My barn behind my house. So it's live edge bar. It's wood clad on the inside. You know,
yeah, that little bit of a rustic feel that I was mentioning earlier. It's beautiful. It really is.
Oh, absolutely. Especially the skeletons and the chandeliers.
Those are only right now for Halloween.
Year round staples.
So, yeah, but pitfalls, anything that came up?
Yeah, so just try to lay the timeline down. I think that when we were first looking for a location, we knew we wanted to be in Windsor. I live in Windsor. John lives in South Windsor. But Windsor just has that. First and foremost, Windsor did not have a brewery, and we strongly felt Windsor needed to have a brewery. Mm-hmm. And we were looking at different locations. We looked at a building downtown Windsor that had a lot of, it was architecturally pleasing, but it had limitations, square footage, parking, that sort of thing. We didn't land on this location until around 2018 is when I initially reached out to the owner of the building.
Okay.
And then at that point in time, I needed to do my homework to put together a business plan, all that kind of stuff, because this is obviously a big undertaking. We're finalizing a deal at the beginning of 2020, COVID happened.
Yes.
I remember sitting here taping off the floors with Daryl and I and driving home, and all of a sudden you're hearing all these reports about COVID, and that's literally what I remember, just taping off the floors, and then the next day they shut everything down.
We literally had our architect had plans for us. You know, we were sitting with the banks, we were sitting with everybody, and ultimately once that happened, it was, I remember like it was yesterday, it was Friday, March 13th, 2020, and then that's when the shit hit the fan, and we sort of like, at that point in time, we just had to wait.
Yeah.
Fortunately, this location, nothing really became of it, and the owner was very enthusiastic about having us as an anchor.
Cool.
And 2021, I reached back out to the owner and said, hey, look, I think I've got my ducks in a row. And then from there, we needed to figure out the financing side of things. So we reached out to friends and family, and we really tried to get the bank support behind us, which was a challenge because we were a new business.
Mm-hmm.
And every bank that I went to basically would ask me, what are you doing for sales? And we're a new company. So the answer was...
What are sales?
Zero.
You mean we have to sell this stuff?
Right, exactly.
No, we're just making it, yeah.
Right, it's just right. For us, man. Well, come on.
So,
you mean giving away at ProFest, is it? Right. Doesn't make you money?
So, I mean, during that whole time step from probably, 2017 all the way up, even on the other side of COVID, you know, John and I would go out and do brew festivals and get our beer out there, get our name out there.
Mm-hmm.
And people were liking the beer, and they were liking the whole concept of the brewery. But ultimately, once we were able to figure out the financing side of things, we hit the ground running. It took us about 5 months to get our specifications, our architectural plans and engineering. Once all that happened, 10 months in construction, and boom, we're open. So here we are.
So probably your biggest obstacle was COVID.
I would say COVID and financing. Financing a project of this size is very challenging, mm-hmm. especially with being a new company and not having any sales.
Right. You know, if you're not familiar with this brewery, go to their Instagram or their Facebook, their website, and take a look at some of the photos. This place is amazing. There's a giant metal tree in the middle of this place. The front entrance is gorgeous. I can't believe the way you guys pulled this off. And, you know, congratulations. You're off to a great start, and I love that.
Well, you bring up a funny thing about the tree, too. I mean, that tree was built by Daryl's sister, actually. And she put 850 hours into that tree just welding it. She was a welding instructor at the school that's just up the road here in Windsor Locks. And she spent a ton of time, as well as Daryl spent a ton of time putting that together with his sister. So it was a true labor of love. It wasn't like we outsourced that.
Wow. So you guys made that yourself. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah. It was my harebrained idea. There's an awkward column in the center of the space that had like a sheetrock built out around it.
Gotcha.
And my background is commercial construction, so mm-hmm. 30 years in commercial construction, and I just had this harebrained idea to build this sculpture in the middle of the room, and my sister was on board.
Yep.
And with her being a welder as a trade, and me with my construction background, we worked mm-hmm. together on that. Not only did she do the tree, but she also did all of her decorative railing that's out on the front side.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So definitely a hell of a job.
Yeah, she's very talented. She didn't do all the welding, but she did definitely everything that had to do with the tree and the front railing and some other things in here. But we probably, welding was a big part of this project.
Mm-hmm.
We probably had 4 to 5 different welding contractors in here doing different aspects of welding.
That's crazy. That is crazy. So we're approaching Halloween at the time of the recording, and I'm hoping to release this before Halloween because it makes more sense, because you guys are called Dudley Town. Now, if you don't know about Dudley Town, you might not be from Connecticut. Dudley Town is famous in Connecticut for being a haunted town. The whole town was pretty much abandoned, and now it's off limits. The police monitor it. They won't let anybody in there, but they say it's haunted. Why did you guys come up with Dudley Town?
So I think one of the reasons we came out with Dudley Town was for the branding aspect. We wanted something that represented Connecticut, that people know in Connecticut. And Dudley Town is one of those things that you talk about and people just go, and they geek out about it. Yeah, it's like no one talks about it, but they talk about it. It's great. So we wanted something that people would remember, A, and then B, for the branding side of things. All our bear names are based off of folklore.
That's awesome.
We all really love that side of things, the dark, heavy metal kind of theme with the folklore tied into it, too.
Everyone loves that, whether they admit it or not.
Of course. So I think that's one of the reasons, we really chose to go down that path. And, you could name your brewery anything, but we wanted something that is represented in Connecticut.
Yeah.
That name just really stuck. Like, when we were spitballing names, there were probably 30 names, 40 names, and then when Dudley Town hit, it was kind of like it stopped the record. And I didn't really know anything about Dudley Town. I was like, had no clue. Googled it on my phone, and I was like, oh, damn. And then at that point in time, like what you guys were just talking about from a branding perspective, I could then visualize that as a brand, and that's really why we decided to go with it. And the weird thing is like the first time that we did a brew festival was up in Springfield for the Worthy, and I remember we had this big, because me, I'm go big or go home. That's just the way I am.
Amen. It's a good way to do it. I mean, we can tell. And it's worked out, hasn't it?
Yeah. Nothing happened.
Our first brew fest,
you got a full ass at all
banner behind us that was like 8 feet tall by 10 feet wide, and we were like stuck in tents with a bunch of other home brewers. And I remember, what's Hefe from the Worthy? So he's like, okay, you guys are serious, right? And we just set it up, and we were just like, I don't know.
But we also had this big ass banner.
That's what I mean.
Everybody just came with their little jockey box, and here we are with this big banner. And
but people then is when I realized, me firstly, that Dudley Town was a thing, because people would ask us, you guys did this about the Dudley Town, and like I didn't realize how much of a following that this stuff has.
Yeah.
And
it's huge.
Yeah. So I mean, we embraced it, obviously, and here we are. Yeah.
And I think even for me, I mean, when I first met these guys, I had never heard of Dudley Town. I came out from Colorado. And so when I first heard it, I was like, who the hell's Dudley? And so then, they kind of explained it to me. And the way that I read it was the punk rock ethos of, like, we do what we want to do, and we want to do it our own way. And so with that, we've kind of lent the names to this more haunted, more visceral kind of punk theme, but it all just lends more to, we're doing it the way that we want to do it, and we want other people to think we're the cool kids because we're doing it our way.
Rob, while I got you talking, I have another question for all three of you, but we'll start with Rob because he's the brewer. I got to ask you, outside of the brewery, what is your favorite or go-to beer?
My favorite beer I've ever had is no longer in production, and it was, I'm not going to speak ill of any brewery, but they were throwing a lot of stuff at the wall at the time, but there was this beer called Steppin' on Ghosts. It was a raspberry milk chocolate stout.
Wow.
And it was on Nitro, and it was just, it's perfect, I mean, it was just so clean, so crisp, it was just great, and, had the nice sweetness, it had the raspberry, the white chocolate, everything.
Wow.
But now, if we're looking for something in production, if I'm going to have a beer with friends and share and, have the nice talks that you do with a beer, I reach for La Fin du Monde. Their Omnibrew does them out of Quebec.
Okay.
And you can get 750ml bottles at, grocery stores here or there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it on draft much, but there's always bottles. And so that's a, 9% Belgian Tripel. Great, wonderful, wonderful beer.
Yeah, I love Belgian Tripels.
When are we doing a Belgian Tripel?
So, well, right before I left the West, I was helping out this great brewery called Second Chapter Brewing. They are in an old library in Ogallala, Nebraska. And I brewed a 10% Belgian Strong or Belgian Golden or Triple or whatever you want to call it for them. Trifel, however you want to say it. There's no masters, no snobs. Say it however you want. I don't care. And I brewed one for them, and they named it after me. They named it Bobby's Belgian Strong.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. And it was delicious. And so
we can definitely
do one. I mean, it's definitely something I have in my repertoire. It's something I love to brew and drink. So we can make that happen.
Awesome. Well, Darryl, what about you?
Man, I tell you, I'm going to hate to admit it, but I'm a big hazy IPA guy. And And probably part of the reason why we're sitting here right now is because I'm a big hazy IPA guy. So for me, for a go-to beer, I mean, we brew some pretty good hazy IPAs.
Absolutely. Here.
I don't really go outside of here.
Well, actually, often. Why should you, right? Just give me a beer.
He's beating around the bush at Sam Adams.
Hey, listen, I'm not going to
really
hate Sam
Adams. Collector.
No, I mean, probably my go-to beer right now at the moment is going to be Son of Ruckus, our hazy IPA.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, if it's outside of our brewery, one of my favorite beers is probably going to be Maine Dinner.
Oh, wow.
I really like that beer. It's different than our hazy, but I just feel like it's a very, it has a lot of depth to it.
Yeah.
And,
old school New England.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like if I'm going to go away from a hazy, I'm going to probably, if I can get it, that's where I would probably reach.
Right. For. Yeah. It's out there. It's very, very popular still.
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, John, what about you?
So I also hate to say it. I love the hazies.
Why do you hate to say that you love the hazies?
Because
I've gotten in their head in a way.
No, yeah, it's Robert.
It's not just Robert.
Because
not,
there's this preconceived.
It's industry wide.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
There is preconceived notions that brewers only like lagers, and the hazy train is bad, but the hazy train's not bad. We're making beautiful hazies, and for a style that is up and coming, I think that we are making really good iterations of the style and making it unique for us and finding new hop combinations and things like that. You know, I mean, I've been sitting here drinking Pilsner. I'm not drinking the hazies, but almost every night I drink a Soul Collector, I drink a Ghost, I drink a Son of Ruckus, because they are so good. They're so sweet and chewy and candy-esque, and I think there's something beautiful about them. So I think in a way the industry has gotten in everyone's head that you shouldn't like hazies, but if you like what you like, why apologize for it?
I agree with you. That's why I'm not, I say I apologize, but I really don't give a shit.
Attaboy.
He beat me to the punch. You know, you were all about the punk rock. You know, if you like hazy, screw, who gives a shit?
Exactly.
Well, let's let John answer this.
Yeah,
John,
no problem. I have been working with Robert for the past couple months, and he has beaten it into my head to not like hazy. No, I'm just kidding. Gotta give him a little crap here. No, so, I mean, basically, the hazies that I really enjoy are, you know, New Park Cloudscape and, you know, Weldwork. My wife's from Colorado, so I like to go out there and you try all the different beers out there, and Weldwork's Juicy Bits is one of my go-tos anytime I'm out there.
Yep.
Ice Cream Man over at Back East.
Yep.
It's just a straight go-to.
Yep.
And
that was my gateway.
Ice Cream Man?
It was my gateway. Yeah.
That's the beauty of craft beer.
Yeah.
There's a beer for everyone. Even when I was just bartending, people would be like, oh, I don't like beer. I was like, well, no. You just haven't had a beer that you like yet.
Right.
And so you have to find the thing that's going to work for you. And these are just the inner workings, the gateway that are going to allow people to expand their palate and find things that they like. You know, the hazies are sweeter and chewier, and that's normally more approachable for people. The sours, the fruited ones especially, are often sweeter than they are sour now.
Right.
And so people are finding that they like beer, and then, you know, if you try a hazy IPA, you're eventually going to work your way to try the West Coast or try the more traditional, like, pale ales, things like that.
Yeah. I think
you hear that, Bud? West Coast?
Yeah. I really feel that for us here at Dudleytown, our goal was to have a bunch of different styles of beer on draft for our customer base. I mean, I remember going to the town, and the town planner was like, you're going to do a brown ale, aren't you? And I'm like,
otherwise, you're not going to build that thing.
We're like, absolutely, we'll do it. Yep.
We have, Robert, you can jump in on this. You might know better than I do. But, I mean, we have a few lagers on draft. We have several IPAs. We have West Coast IPAs. We have pale ales. We have sours. We have hard seltzer. Our goal was really to develop enough beer so we could try to satisfy as many people as possible.
Yeah,
we try to have a really eclectic offerings of beer. So when we were looking at what we were going to brew first, we were like, all right, I don't know that this is going to sell in this market, or maybe this is going to be our biggest selling in this market. So there's some things that we've thrown at the wall that we've now since sold out of, and we're like, well, we're not going to do that again right now, but we are going to kind of push this. So, you know, this market is very hazy heavy, so we're going to do more hazies. This market's very sour heavy, we're going to do more sours.
Right.
We're always going to have a seltzer on tap, because it's an offering for people who otherwise wouldn't venture into the building.
Do you think that your area has a certain demographic for the beer, or a certain type of beer? Because I know that other brewers have said that they have specific beers in their area that maybe another spot in Connecticut, it's another beer. Yeah. Do you find that here?
I find that anywhere. I mean, I think that is just a universal truth. People are going to flock to things that they are told is cool.
Right.
No one knows what's cool until you tell them. Mm-hmm. And so if we put out this great Czech lager that we have, everybody's like, well, I don't like dark beer. It's like, well, try this. It's not your porter or your stout that's going to be chewier and sweeter. It's very dry. It's crisp. Mm-hmm. But it has a nice coffee, roasty characteristic to it. And so every person we hand that beer to and explain, like, this isn't your normal dark beer, they end up liking it.
Yeah.
And so with that in mind, I mean, you know, it's all about having wonderful staff that can create a bridge between the customer and the producer.
So you're the brewer. You're the one that keeps making the same beers and also the variety of beers. But what would you say is the best seller here?
Just by numbers, our best-selling beer currently has been Ghost, which is one of our hazy offerings, but it's a close second with Son of Ruckus. It's just those numbers are skewed because we've ran out of certain things and we didn't have it for a couple
right.
of weeks. So I think those are easily our two best-selling beers, and it's just the hazies. And yep. then it is let
the
up.
Sours, really. Yeah, the sours are after that. And then, honestly, it's weird. Like, I look at the numbers every single day, and Saturday, Big Pumpkin Spinning Cheese was our number one seller, and that's a pumpkin ale that they do a garnish on, and our staff behind the bar probably doesn't like it as much because they have to go through the process of adding that rim on there, and we're
right.
slammed, and they get like 10 of those in a row, their eyeballs are popping out of their heads, but you know, people really like that beer, and Robert really brought another level of, you know, talking about doing the garnishing and stuff. We don't do
right.
a lot of the beers, but that particular beer goes well with.
Right.
We would like to do more garnishes on our beers. I think it's something that just truly elevates the glass, it elevates the experience for the customer.
Right.
And, you know, there's pretty much, you could find a garnish for any beer.
Right.
And
Or not. Me, I'm like a non-garnished fan, but anyways.
But we love it. We love it.
I know.
So the one thing I find super interesting is, I think, you know, the hazies are always going to be a thing, but the sours, I think, are really
trendy
right now. You, we were just at a brew fest this past weekend, mm-hmm. and we brought Soul Collector, mm-hmm. which is a double dry hop IPA that everybody loves. It's got all those all those words in it that
yep.
everybody loves.
Yep.
And then we brought a Buried Bones, which is a sour. And people were coming back around, and they kept saying, give me more of the Buried Bones.
Wow.
Give me the And we were like, oh, my God. You know, you think you bring the double IPA, and people are going to want that. And,
right.
And now sours are just...
Yep. Yeah.
One
of my sons really enjoys the sours. He likes the Connecticut Valley sours because they make a whole bunch of those fruity
mm-hmm.
sours. And he keeps bringing them over to me. And, you know, I'm like, okay, you're going to make me drink this. You're going to get on the camera with me when you see my reaction. Okay. And I'm going to tell everybody that you brought it. So.
Well, have you had our sours?
No, not yet.
No, not yet.
I think you're going to have some.
Okay.
So
it's just a little splash.
Yeah.
I would. The thing that I think we try to do uniquely with our sours is nowadays it's all smoothie sour, smoothie sour, smoothie sour. And they're just these very viscous bombs of flavor. And honestly, a lot of them are delicious. But there's something to be said about a really bright, crisp sour that still provides all of the fruit flavor that you're looking for with the sweetness. And again, you know, we do make ours a little sweeter. They are soured down to the normal level, and then there's a tad bit of back sweetening that happens it, just to make it more approachable. Because we have tons of people who come in here, and they say, I don't drink beer.
Correct.
And it's like, I drink wine. It's so.
What are you doing here, then?
Yeah.
Drink it now.
My husband dragged me here. My my wife dragged me here. I don't drink it.
The plus ones. So the plus ones, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. And so we've made them a touch sweeter that lends it to be more approachable to people.
Nice. Right. And the funny thing is like we've had guys, I'll just say contractors, blue collar guys, that you would think never in a million years would drink a fruited sour. And I'll just throw this out there, Dave, if you're listening. I'll just use your first name.
Name but, drop.
Drop the last name. You mean guys with these big beards?
He tells us that, hey, Buried Bones is his favorite beer. And I would have never guessed in a million years that that would have been the one that he would have went with. Now, he's a non-craft beer guy. He was one of our welding contractors. And, you know, so I always kid around that he drinks the beer we're not going to talk about today. he denies and he says that he drinks a different brand. But it's just, I find it very interesting when people come in here and, you know, I always feel like we, for the most part, I think that we have a beer that will satisfy you if you come into Dudley Town Brewing Company.
Awesome. Okay, I want to real quick go back to the garnishing. Yeah. So I don't like pumpkin spice. I don't like pumpkin spice. And what I did was I went to another brewery, and the brewer and I, we've become friends through this blog that I'm doing, and he asked me to try it, and I did. And I actually thought it was a really good, and I judged it according to what it was, so I wasn't trying to be biased. But he asked me if I wanted the garnish. I was like, no. So I was at Off the Rails Brewing yesterday in Stafford Springs, and they had a pumpkin spice beer. And I was like, oh, boy, here we go again. And it was garnished. And I'll tell you, I got to admit it, I'm sorry. Yeah, with delicious.
I agree. I tried it with you too, and oh my God.
Yeah, it was. I was shocked at how that little bit of sugary something really brought out the flavor and enhanced it.
Was that the pumpkin spice or the apple one?
No, that was the pumpkin spice that I did that with.
Okay.
So when I make beers like that I'm envisioning it to have a garnish from the beginning. When we flavor it with the thought that it's going to have that. And so, you know, if you make it too overpowering in the glass without the garnish, it's not going to be balanced.
Okay.
And so if you can balance it in the glass with the garnish, say we're rimming it with cinnamon sugar or we're rimming it with pumpkin spice and sugar, then we are making the adjustments to how we're making that recipe with that in mind from the beginning.
Yes.
So ours is like, it's very subtle and it's very nuanced, and then you add the rim and it just elevates it to the next level.
That's interesting. So you're not thinking of it as, okay, this is a pumpkin spice, I have to rim it. You're thinking of, I want to create a beer that would have a rim on it and be the focal point of what you're making.
In a sense. I mean, think about it like if we were crafting a cocktail. I mean, I'm not going to make you an old-fashioned without, you know, simple syrup and oranges or Luxardo cherries. Or I'm not going to do that.
Thank you.
So, of course. And so if you keep all of that in mind, most people are vying towards getting the rim. And obviously there's people who don't. And those people still enjoy the beer. It's not like it's bad by any means. But when I'm making those, I'm always like, okay, how can we elevate this to the next step? It's like the people who are expressing the orange peel around your glass. It's all kinds of different things that you can elevate a beer with. Before I ever brewed beer, I was a cocktail bartender, and so I kind of think of it in that sense sometimes.
Cool. Yeah, sort of like a margarita, too. You know, I just got to have that lemon and salt, or lime and salt. But
salt, sugar, whatever you want on your rim. I mean, however you want to drink your drink is how you should drink it. I mean, there's people who take our peanut butter porter, and they put our mixed berry sour in it as a topper, make a peanut butter and jelly beer.
Oh my goodness!
You know, it's
my wife loves it.
If it tastes good to you,
who cares?
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Palate perception.
I know. I had a peanut butter and jelly beer, and that was the first hangover I got in years.
the sugar stuff. So we're starting to run out of time a little bit, but I gotta ask: with the way this place is set up, I mean, it's so big. It's there's so much to offer here. Do you have any future plans?
I mean, I'll say I have plans to make lots of good beers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm John and I are spitballing constantly in terms of that realm of it. We are always on the lookout for beers that excite us, beers that we think will excite other people, and we're trying new things. We have a pilot system downstairs, so we are piloting stuff, not as much as we were before we opened because we've been really busy, but we have been trying to add more things to our our toolbox, our repertoire, so that we can just give people what they want.
Right. Have you thought of a triple?
I dream about one, actually. The issue is they don't tend to sell that well.
Right.
You guys are canning, correct?
We are.
Okay.
So downstairs we have a whole canning, Cody canning machine downstairs. Okay.
So are you planning on distributing?
Yeah, so I'll jump in here. So really our initial thought was to get our legs under us and just make enough beer so that way we can satisfy our tap room. Mm-hmm. We also will can off small runs of our product. Mm-hmm. But our concern that we have is what we ran into the first couple of weeks is we pushed too much beer into cans and we ran out of beer on draft. And that was eye-opening for us. So at that point in time, we sort of cut back on our can runs and we're really a tap room model here.
Right.
So people ask us all the time about distro and that sort of thing. And I think that right now we're not looking to go out to distro. I think eventually, we are talking about maybe throwing some kegs out to market.
I'd like to order one now.
we just want to make sure that wherever we put our beer that is being served properly, lines are clean, so on and so forth. Sometimes you go into, we've all been to establishments where you get a beer and it's like you're excited, like I'll just say a main dinner. Mm-hmm. Without slamming the restaurant that I went to, I get the beer and I'm like, that's not a main dinner. It wasn't presented in the way it should have been, right?
Yeah, the lines probably weren't clean.
Correct. Yeah. Right. So we want to be selective with that. That'll probably be our first line of distro, and then if we're going to go past that, to be determined, I guess.
All right, beautiful.
And I feel like the way that we're brewing beer right now, we try to be as meticulous as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. So, we're tracking our dissolved oxygen into our cans, making sure that we are way below the average threshold of DO so that those cans will stay fresher longer. And we're just looking to make sure that we can do everything consistently and do everything in a way that if we were to push it out to the public in different spaces than our own tap room, it would just be as clean, crisp, beautiful as possible. And people always say once you start getting bigger and bigger that your quality goes down. Right. And we don't want that to be the case. I mean, right now it's currently just John and I, and we just got one other guy helping us within the last month or so. Mm-hmm. And it's been 3 months and we're nearing the 500th barrel of beer that we've brewed.
Wow.
And so we're selling a lot in-house, but there can always be more to be had. And so it's all about keeping everything consistent and keeping our quality control as high as we possibly can.
Beautiful. All right. Well, guys, we're a little bit out of time here, so I want to thank you so much, first of all, for allowing us to come in here like this. I really appreciate it. And for the beer, really appreciate that. But we hope that we might be able to do reviews with you in the future and keep in contact here. I love this brewery. I really do. You're worth the wait.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
All right. Well, Bud from Bud's Beer Blurb.
And this is Nick.
Thank you, guys.
I think it's time for us to pour you guys a beer.
Yep. Yeah.
Woo! And now, Bud's Beer Blurb presents Hops 101.
This edition of Hops 101 is brought to you by Growler Power. Growler Power keeps your favorite craft beverages tasting fresh and crisp with each pour. Growler Power, pour proudly. On this edition of Hops 101, we present to you El Dorado Hops. Born and bred in 2010 at the CLS Farms located in Yakima Valley, Washington State, this hop is bursting with juicy pineapple and tropical notes. El Dorado is a great dual-purpose hop boasting an alpha acid of 13 to 17%, making this an efficient and effective bittering hop, but can also be used in late additions to maximize the fresh, fruity aroma and flavor. As a bittering hop, El Dorado lends a firm but balanced bitterness, and when used in those later additions, El Dorado brings bright, tropical fruit flavors and aromas of pineapple, pear, watermelon, and stone fruit. CLS Farms and El Dorado Hops are a trademarked product of CLS Farms. All rights reserved. This has been Hops 101. Thank you for joining us. Bud's Beer Blurb the podcast can be heard on Spotify, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, and of course on our blog site at budsbeerblurb.com. We can also be found on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search at Bud's Beer Blurb and we'll pop right up. Thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you next time on Bud's Beer Blurb.